Hello, before we start, just a little message. Last week we talked about a Manchester live show, which is happening in April. We said that we'd share ticket details in this episode, but all the tickets were bought by Patreons as part of the Patreon pre-sale. So there are no tickets left to buy. Although, for complicated reasons to do with fire regulations and the current level of renovation of the building, and also the personal mores, preferences and peccadilloes of Mayor of Manchester, Andy Burnham, we think that 50 more tickets will be going on sale nearer the time, and we'll let you know about that when that comes around. Okay, on with the show! Well, to start, I guess what I'm going to say is normally when we come into an episode of Three Bean Salad, and we've got this intro bit, and we don't plan anything to do with the podcast, really, we just turn up and... But I will often have in the back of my mind, I'll think, well, if I need to talk about something, I've got like a little anecdote or a thought or something that's happened to me during the week that I can probably get 2 minutes out of.
Get some mileage.
I've got nothing.
Seriously? Has literally nothing happened?
I can't even remember what happened to me yesterday. It's like I was born this morning and I can't.
Yeah.
I only exist in the present at this moment for some reason.
And doesn't that feel as good as they say it feels?
No.
Because they have been telling us for years that we should all be aiming for that.
Well, that's the state that Rory Stewart attains, doesn't he? When he's talking to Alistair Campbell. Now, we've referred to the podcast, haven't we, a few times, The Rest is Politics.
Yeah. Featuring Rory Stewart. Do you know why I'm actually a bit tired today? Because I stayed up last night listening to an episode of it when I should have gone to bed.
Of The Rest is Politics?
Yeah.
God. Were you trying to untangle the situation in Yemen? Once and for all, in your head.
Oh, God, that's quite a sad point to have reached.
That's an awful point to have reached, isn't it?
But Rory Stewart, right, he's talked about, he goes off and does, like, weeks of meditation.
Does he?
Yeah, he does retreats where you're doing, like, 8 hours a day, so, I think. Like,
hang on.
8 hours a day.
They interviewed somebody recently who does this, so I wonder if you've mixed this up.
No, I haven't mixed this up, Ben.
Okay.
He does serious retreats. He's talked about this.
Because they interviewed that guy who wrote Sapiens, whose name is Yuval... Harari or something like that?
Loads of people have talked to loads of other people, Ben. It doesn't mean that I think the person that they were talking to is them necessarily.
It's the most spurious defense I think you've come up with so far, Henry.
Do you know what I mean? People, I can distinguish between two people talking and which of them owns the biography. That
No, I'm not saying that you're...
whose life experiences.
I'm not calling you a thicko, Henry.
Okay, thanks.
I'm just saying that I recently heard him talk to someone who talks about how they go on these silent retreats.
I know, that's true.
Yeah.
I know. Now you come to mention it. It's not impossible, is it? It is possible to slightly meld two people when they're talking in your head, isn't it? Especially when you can't see them.
Do they have similar voices?
Not really.
No. Mm. One's Israeli and one's Scottish.
Okay.
It's quite a different vibe.
Were you giving them your full concentration?
I probably wasn't. I do think people that can do those things, it's pretty, I find that pretty mind-blowing, what that's like.
I think the closest, I'm thinking about it now, the closest I ever get to anything like that in my life is sometimes if I go cycling, for example, for quite a long time, you get so fundamentally bored and there's something rhythmical about the way your legs are going and the sounds, that you do kind of switch off a bit and you become a bit like a kind of toad.
Yeah. Yeah,
toad brain, where you're just existing and you're not really thinking about very much. And then time flies quite fast. But I don't like it at all because I finish and I kind of go, oh, like those 3 hours went past quite quickly. I'm like, wow, I'd sort of wasted that time really.
I know what you mean. When you reach like a sort of flow state, isn't it? When you're doing something that you quite enjoy and you lose yourself in. It's almost like, at the end of it, you're like, I wasn't aware of existence then. So that's sort of like wasted time in a way.
I was basically dead. Yeah, that's how I feel. Yeah.
I was basically dead, but functional. I was a zombie.
Yeah.
But then when it's over, you're then back to this brain, which is going, oh, God, worrying about things and sort of, and then sort of yearning for the next flow state where you can not be worrying anymore.
Mike, how do you access your flow state?
I'm not sure I have a flow state.
But I'm pretty sure that it's Googling different Wi-Fi bundle options and stuff, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, there's that, of course. I don't know. I mean, does it make a difference that I'm a spectacularly heavy sleeper? So there's I mean, as close to death as you can get on today while being technically alive, barely breathing that deep.
That's incredible.
Sleeping. So is that maybe that's the ultimate reset?
You reach kind of like Juliet from Romeo and Juliet levels of unconsciousness, don't you? Where everyone thinks you're dead and people start killing themselves.
Oh, yeah. I could easily be mistaken for dead. Yeah. The number of times I've been...
Lawyers have come and you've gone through...
Exactly. I've been officially certified.
Certifications happen. Yeah.
I've got a whole wall of death certificates that I've decorated the house.
Yeah.
And the priest doesn't even come anymore, does he? He just goes, guy.
No. But every time it's like you're closest. I think he's got to be dead this time. We've tried all the tests. we put six crabs down his trousers.
Yeah. I often wake up with pins in my feet and crabs down my pyjama bottoms. Yeah. To shake out every morning.
I mean, they actually started, your left leg from the knee down was cremated, wasn't it?
That was a horrible morning.
That was a horrible morning. But each time you tweak the playlist, don't you?
For the cremation.
For the cremation.
Not many people get the chance to plan their own funeral so often as I do. Yeah, I've been buried at sea as well a couple of times. That's quite fun. I don't mind that so much. That's why I've got it stipulated in my will to be buried in my togs.
Yeah,
just in case it's a sea bear.
And with a rucksack full of snacks. You're always buried with a rucksack full of snacks, aren't you, in case?
Yeah, the reality is most people, when they sleep, they go into sleep mode, the equivalent of sleep mode, or as I am shut off. I'm shut down.
You're deep in sort of aeroplane mode, aren't you?
Yeah, it's beyond that. It's full shut down. Yeah. To remember that's it.
That's a good skill to have, though, to be able to go that deep into it. Because I think that is a bit like it, actually, because in some of the meditations, they talk about going deep. And you're going deep there, aren't you? Deep into your sort of subconscious. Do you have dreams? Do you remember dreams and stuff, Mike?
Not very often.
No. But if you have one, it'll be a dream where it's just you going, Mike, this is you, Mike.
Tomorrow's Tuesday. You've got to be at the vet at 11 a.m.
Tomorrow's
you
Tuesday.
You best check the pressure on the tyres at some point during the afternoon, right? Because you are going to Portsmouth on the weekend. That'd be a good idea. Because pressure's cargo, Mike. Come along now.
It's time for Provincial Dad Chat.
Who's hit my bloody walking boots?
I'm not saying it's ruined the holiday. I'm just saying I asked for rum raisin.
Get your skates on, kids, otherwise we'll miss the inflatable session.
She's taking her mother to see Blood Brothers, which means more Top Gear time for me.
Why would I need to go and see a podiatrist?
Of course I've kept the warranty information, darling.
Also, I have noticed that my wife has started drying clothes on our radiators. That will lead to damp eventually if we keep doing that.
Yeah. Also, do check out the new Hyperoptic bundle being offered by Three at the moment. Just give it a second glance. I know you looked at it last week. Just give it a second glance. Something to look into, Mike. So just as a recap, Mike, this is you, Mike. You've basically managed to turn dreams into useful sort of admin time for yourself. You used to have imaginative dreams, but those are a waste of time. So it's you, Mike, talking to you, Mike. While we're here, here's just a recap of some of your account numbers and passwords.
Seeing as it's just us.
Seeing as it's just us. So it's Mike123. That's for your...
That's for everything.
And that's for everything. It's the ultimate double bluff. That's what happens, isn't it?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Yeah, that's uncanny.
So, you know, you were talking about cycling and how when you do cycling, you sort of feel like a toad.
Yeah. Toad mind.
Toad mind. Which is not something that the cool new running shops kind of lean into, is it, to get you in. Think like a toad. Be a toad.
It's very hard to market, isn't it?
Very hard to market anything toad-based like that.
Because my skin becomes all slightly damp all over.
Yeah.
From the exertion.
Yeah. And you make a loud gribbiting noise, don't you? It starts emanating from...
Your throat bloats to over the size of your head.
That's right, yeah.
And you're reviled by society.
Yeah. Misunderstood, Mike.
And it's not just the warts. It's not. It's everything. What I was thinking was, so you go cycling, yeah?
Sometimes.
Yeah. Well, I imagine you look forward to cycling.
Yeah.
Well, here's what I'm picturing, right? Which is, you know, oh, I'm going for a cycle. Oh, I'll get my helmet on.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll blow up my tyres, remove any dead birds.
From my mouth.
Because otherwise, how are new dead birds going to get in there?
Well, catch any new ones.
Catch any new ones.
I'm like a basking shark, just mouth open down a country lane in the hope that a little wren or a starling might end up in there.
Yeah, that's right. And moving as slowly and ponderously as one of the great basking sharks, isn't it? Slowly scouring the ocean floor.
Yes.
It's amazing how the bike stays upright.
Most people would fall over on a bike going at that speed.
Exactly,
but
most people would. So I imagine, so you look forward to it. Mm-hmm. Maybe in your week or in your, you know, I'll try a new route, that kind of thing.
Yeah, or like I'll look when there might be a sunny day to do it and kind of think I'll do it then, you know.
Exactly. Okay, so here's my theory. That's what it's about. It's that.
I think you're right. Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah. It's the planning, the anticipation, the build-up.
This is also true massively of holidays, I've come to realise.
Oh, come to papa.
Book a last-minute holiday, you've kind of ruined the whole... It's not kind of the point.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think it's true of holidays. I think it's true of... I watch football games. I go and watch football games. In a football stadium between football teams, and
they'll be kicking a football.
They'll be kicking a football around. There'll be loads of footballs though, but there'll only be one that'll be kicking around at any one point.
Okay,
and obviously I build up to that in the week. I look forward to it. I read about it, and then the thing happens. And because you were saying, Ben, that you know you had this sort of worry or concern about the fact that cycling it matters to you, and yet when it happens, you feel like a toad or a dead toad. Implied.
I think because, a kind of toad who's coming, who's either going into or coming out of hibernation.
Okay, yeah. So grumpy toad.
Grumpy old toad.
If he's waking up.
Yeah.
Yeah, certainly.
Famished.
Yeah, yeah.
or over-bloated and full and exhausted.
Or one or the other, yeah.
If toads hibernate. Sorry, just to see off that bollock.
If. We know they probably do, but there's a small chance. I mean, basically, all of the world's creatures pretty much hibernate, don't they?
And that's another big bollock coming away.
Well, we're talking about the Rhondda mega hibernating toad, aren't we?
Yeah, that's what we're talking about. Yeah,
it's a very specific species.
But we're talking about certainly any of the hairy toads,
hairy Arctic toads.
Yeah, and if you say there aren't any, maybe that's because they're camouflaged. So screw you. You can always win an argument, by the way, with a naturalist or a zoologist using the old camouflage. Claws. Maybe it's just too well camouflaged. That's why you've never seen one.
I mean, because this is the last episode of the series, anyone wanting to bollock you now has a full month of research time to put together a really strong case.
Yeah. Or of hibernation time.
Or hibernation time.
Yeah. Sleep on it. So I think the point is that you're looking forward to this thing which you enjoy, you think you enjoy, then it happens and you enjoy it so much or you're so in it that it just the time flies by and then it's over. It's like, what the hell was that? I've been looking forward to this and it was just like being a dead toad.
Yeah.
Because the time's just gone. So, like, what are we wanting here? We're wanting time to go. That's a weird thing to want.
Yeah, exactly. It's a paradox.
So that's one thing which can happen. The other thing which can happen, which I find with holidays, like you say, Christmas.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also football games. I go and watch football games. So that's just three examples of things which you build up to, you look forward to. And then when they're happening, I definitely have this on Christmas. It's not so much that I'm in a flow state. Henry just giving out. He's giving out a present with one hand, and he's
and watching Shrek 3 at the same time.
Watching Shrek 3, and he's using his foot to baste the pudding. It's extraordinary. How's he doing that? And are those perfectly done honey crisped parsnips flying out of his arse? He really is in his Christmas flow state. But it's more that it's that thing of I've been looking forward to this thing. And now it's happening. And now, I always have this on holiday, which is like, I sort of go, what now? I'm on the, it's happening. What? I'm on the beach. Now what? God. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
A slight sense of sort of a panic related to time passing, I think, is what it is. I don't know.
No, I understand what you mean. On holiday, I think I don't feel like a toad.
No.
I think there's something more, it's more physical with the cycling where you sort of...
Yeah, and it's just an irony, that, but that is when you will look the most like a toad, ironically, just as it happens, isn't it? Because you will be lolling about in a sort of pond, exactly, won't you? it's one of the great ironies that you will almost be a like-for-like behavioural match for a toad at that point, won't you?
Releasing my spawn into the pool. Yeah. The toads spawn? I know so little about toads.
Licking your eyes clean. Licking your left eye clean for half an hour. Licking your right eye clean for half an hour. Yeah, all that stuff.
But that's the great thing about package holiday. You don't have to worry about anything apart from licking your eyes clean.
Exactly. Occasionally complaining that maybe the pond isn't hot enough. The point here is, it's somehow linked to what we were talking about before. I'm not quite sure how. This idea of...
Well, it was me saying that basically if it sort of goes well, time passes without you noticing it. Yes. And then you've just burned loads of time. And time is what we're here to do, right?
Exactly.
So really you want things to drag.
You want things to drag.
Get thee to Stratford.
And we can link to the Globe website. You can buy tickets for all of the Globe's upcoming seasons. Just press the link.
Savor your life. Slow it down.
There's a character in Catch 22 who does that.
Is there?
Who tries to cultivate boredom to make his life last longer, essentially.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
So this is my theory, Ben, is that it's all about the anticipation and the build-up. That's where you can actually feel the pleasure. Hmm. Buying the knee pads, no matter whatever it is, you know, whatever the hobby or pursuit is that you have, yeah, getting the fake beards, the meat hand, buying the products, you know, whatever it is that you do. That stuff, that's what it's about. And then the thing happens, and either you're enjoying it so much you're in a flow state, in which case it's like being a dead toad, or you're just in this sense of kind of feeling that the thing is going away from you. That's what I feel on Christmas Day. It's like, this is Christmas Day, it's happening, it's going, what's going on? The other thing I get this with, big time, is eating a croissant. So this is where I think this, I can boil down what we're talking about here to the experience of eating a croissant, genuinely, which is, I look forward to eating a croissant, and then eating the croissant, and it's so sort of brief that it's almost like, it's gone. And also, I actually, even while eating it, I'm aware that it's going now, this thing I've been looking forward to, and it's so hard to almost actually enjoy it.
I had this recently where I looked forward for ages to eating a donut that I was going to buy.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
All morning, I walked to the bakery, big shout out to Bruton's Bakery, best donuts on God's green earth.
Bruton's?
Bruton's.
Yeah.
Looking forward to it all morning. Go to the bakery, buy it. Oh my God, look at it. It's so nice.
Did you manage to wait until you got home at least?
No. So then I ate it.
You're not even out of the shop, halfway through the shop door.
Bruton still had one hand on one half of it. I mean, Bruton was still holding on to the other half of it. But Ben,
desperately pinching onto it with his pincers. Well,
give it back. Well, Bruton,
give it to me. Et tu, Bruton?
Bruton has a special spatula now, a metal spatula, which he shoves onto Ben's head to stop.
Yeah, like a pizza, like to delivering a pizza into a pizza oven. It's one of those, isn't it? Just slides in and slides out again.
Exactly, yeah. It slides in because otherwise Ben will keep up eating up his arm. But by the way, out of interest, has Bruton's ever looked into doing croutons just as a...
I know they have invested in one of those tennis ball firing machines, haven't they, to see if they can adapt it for donuts, but it's destroying the donuts at the moment.
He just gets through them too fast. There's no point. He just, hit me with another one. Yeah.
Anyway, so I'm walking out of the bakery, I'm walking home, and I'm also listening to a podcast. I can't remember which one it was. The podcast was fascinating.
It was The Rest Is Politics.
The Rest Is Donuts.
The Rest Is Donuts.
I was listening to the podcast. It was fascinating. I was also eating the donut, and I didn't notice that I'd eaten the donut.
Oh, that's bad. Then you've wasted it.
I know that. That's horrible. That's a horrible feeling. I ate this absentmindedly, an absent-minded treat.
That is one of the worst. Yeah, that's a shame.
And then obviously, you know, you can't eat donuts all day, so... You know, you're thinking, well, I just wasted that opportunity.
Yeah,
I don't get to do this all the time.
But it's very hard to not, because what you do is certainly what I find with a croissant is I whiz through it the first half of that croissant. I'm like you on a bike, Ben. I'm in a flow state. I'm not even aware of what's happening. So before I know it, I have to hold myself up. I'm like, bloody hell, you're halfway through this croissant, Henry. And I've not enjoyed it. And then from then on, once you've reached the halfway point of the croissant, the rest of it, you can't fully enjoy because it has poignancy. Because every bite is taking you away from the state of having a croissant.
Yeah.
And you know, once you're in the second half, that croissant, and I get nostalgia. I'm like, why didn't I enjoy that first half when I was young and free and I was crunching my way through its left arm and I still had the whole croissant ahead of me. Why didn't I enjoy it? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I genuinely get that feeling. Do you ever have that? Like, I wish I'd made the most of those early bites.
Yeah.
I buy a second croissant.
Well, that's it. How do you solve it? Okay, so if you get a second croissant, Mike, at what point do you get the second croissant?
That's a good question.
Because would you buy it after you finished it? Because if you do that, I think what... I've been down that road, Mike.
Yeah.
I'm not an idiot. Yeah? I've been down that road.
Doesn't feel the same.
Well, no, the trouble is, right, if you finish the croissant and you go...
I think I'm doubling up from the get-go.
Well, that's okay. That's interesting. So, but let me just quickly take you through it. If you buy the second croissant after you finish the first one, which I've done, I've basically done this. I've eaten a croissant. I've gone, I didn't really enjoy that. What the hell, I wasn't even concentrating.
Yeah.
I go up and get another one. Obviously, it's a bit embarrassing. I might have to move cafe. Get the second one. But then what happens is, it's a very weird feeling. It's a bit like time travel because you've gone back to, you're basically back exactly where you started with another croissant. And there's guilt, there's other emotions start getting involved.
This can all be ameliorated by...
Yeah.
Well, there's a couple of things. There needs to be a group setting. You need to be turning up somewhere with a bag of pastries. It's an expensive solution.
Okay.
But you turn up somewhere with a bag of pastries, and there's at least N plus one.
A meat hand?
Meat hand. In case someone out there isn't sweet toast and just fancies chowing down on a ham thumb, whatever it might be. And then you have your ecstasy croissant, and then there's a spare in the bag. And you tell yourself you're abstemious because you... You haven't eaten four croissants. You could, because there's loads in the bag.
So you're suggesting that I...
It's an expensive solution. You need...
That I buy a bag of pastries, and how many do I eat?
You eat two.
I eat two.
But you need a group of people there. You need maybe six or seven people there. You're talking, you're buying...
Well, I have to have other people around.
You know, you're buying that number of pastries plus one.
This is becoming really difficult to organise.
You need to be the guy that turns up with the pastries.
Okay, but where am I turning up? Where am I going?
You need to organise a meeting.
I've got to create an entire second career around this.
Maybe a local political campaign of some sort.
Okay, I need to stand for the Lib Dems. I'm standing for this is how it works. This is how the Lib Dems find people. I'm standing.
This is how you get into the Lib Dems.
I'm doing it.
You get your campaign team there. Maybe a couple of people from the press.
You've got to give pastry to Ed Davey.
And when I casually say, oh, by the way, I know we're talking about parking, we're talking about care workers, and we're talking about green incentives for this meeting. By the way, just so you know, just on the side, I brought a little bag of croissants, and they don't know that's what the meeting's actually about. It's exactly. About the croissants. Exactly.
And they're hesitant, they're polite, they're Lib Dems. They're not going to be voracious. They're not going to go for it. They probably will have had breakfast because you wouldn't have warned them about the croissants in the first place.
Exactly.
So that means you don't need to worry about, actually, will I get my second croissant? Is there, unless Ed Davey does go, if he goes for three, then you're in trouble.
Yeah. Well, no, but that's why three of those croissants are dummies. They're really plastic. Yeah. I don't need to waste money spending on croissants every day.
Okay, decoy croissants. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you do that, then you do end up with a reputation within the Lib Dems as the guy who turns up with a bag, saying he's got a bag for the croissants, but actually there's just two croissants and three plastic croissants.
Yeah. And
so, Mike, what you're talking about is leadership potential.
So it will become known, which is, by the way, if Henry brings croissants, just a little bit of advice, get in there quick, get in on the bag quick, because it's only the first three that are edible.
But he will be furious. If you do manage to get an actual croissant, he will be furious. And he'll have a sort of existential crisis.
And we know the way the House of Commons works, it could be quite, there's probably quite a lot of bullying. It's quite a nasty place, isn't it? I mean, the nickname Plastic Croissant, for example, that'll stick. Yeah. Right, old plastic croissants there.
That's going to follow you around. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
See that sticking. I mean, that's assuming I get elected. Which, I mean, I think
it's nailed on at this point.
I think it's nailed on. No, so, well, no, Mike, that's a good... So I've thought about... So getting two croissants is interesting, bag of croissants. I've thought about... One option is halfway through, you buy a second one. Because it's more about being able to enjoy the second half of the croissant, knowing that you're not ending your croissant experience.
And then you could even throw away that second croissant.
Exactly. But it has to be there so that you don't have this kind of existential panic during the second half of the first cross.
Because you're not reaching the finish line, yeah.
Another way of doing it, I've thought about, this is expensive though. You know how we talked about you with cycling? Mm. You look forward to it, then it happens. A lot of the pleasure is in the looking forward to. Is there a way to get looking forward to into the actual experience? So what I'm talking about is halfway through the croissant, the other half, either it starts retracting away from me, maybe I've hired someone who starts pulling it away.
A little... Bit of fishing line or something, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm both experiencing it and having it put into the future rather than the present at the same time. I think one option, by the way, I think, as I understand it, would be if I was to eat a croissant whilst going beyond the event horizon of a black hole.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it'd be perfect stretch point. Yeah, yeah. Infinite stretch point.
Yeah, because at that point, the croissant, I think, would be infinitely kind of being anticipated.
Yeah. Or if you can't manage that, you could just put a little sticker of a croissant on the edge of your glasses, so it just looks like there's a croissant really nearby.
You know, often there's a really cheap solution like that, and it's just a croissant sticker. Like, this is nailed, we've done it, thanks, bye. It's the croissant sticker. I think it is, isn't it?
Mike could have saved the US loads of money if he was around in the 60s for the Apollo program. If he'd just gone, you don't need to go to the moon. Just
put a little sticker of the moon surface on the bottom of your specs. Looks like you're walking on the moon.
For the final time this series, let's turn on the bean machine. This week's topic, as sent in by Stephen from Ireland.
Thanks, Stephen.
Thank you, Stephen.
Is the circus.
Creepy.
It's creepy, isn't it?
Creepy.
Those posters are creepy. I mean, I think people overstate how creepy clowns are. So when clowns come up in conversations, someone reliably will go, oh, they're horribly creepy, aren't they? But they're not really.
I'm terrified of clowns.
Okay, here's what I think the rule for clowns is, and it's the same for everyone, though, which is they're creepy. Imagine a clown, picture it.
Yeah.
Now picture all its teeth are red and there's blood dribbling down its chin.
Right.
Then it's scary, but that goes for Tim Henman. Doesn't it? It goes for Keir Starmer.
It's true. They've got a bad rap, though, haven't they, of late? To the point where if you go to a circus now and it's a cool, proper circus, it's not a circus. It's just the acrobats have got together and go, should we get rid of those weird clown guys and those animals, the people complaining about the animals? Should we get rid of all that stuff and do we just...
You're right. It's mainly acrobatics, though, isn't it?
But call it a circus. We'll still call ourselves a circus.
Are you telling me that I can't, as a voting bloody citizen of this country, I can't go and watch a freak show?
as a ratepayer. You can't go and see a bearded elephant.
Well, Henry, you'll soon have a front seat for the freak show when you become a Lib Dem MP. Ladies and gentlemen, please pray silence for a moment of satire.
Jonathan Swift.
Holding institutions to account.
Mark Twain.
Speaking truth to power.
Chaucer.
A core part of any healthy democracy.
Chumbawamba.
Can our jokes actually change government policy? Of course they can.
Quiet, please respect this important mode of humour. Yeah, Mike, you're right. The modern circus is a totally different thing to the circus of 50 years ago, right? Because 50 years ago, you've got clowns.
I mean, as a child, I definitely went to two circuses that were a ring, spit and sawdust, a ring master, all that kind of stuff.
A very mentally ill elephant.
Yeah.
A mentally ill elephant, a defanged tiger.
Oh, God.
With liver failure.
A demoustached Frenchman.
Horrible to see.
Horrible.
And he's actually pulled out himself.
He's had to pull it out himself.
With his own beak.
So he's got that dead stare of a demoustached Frenchman, a dead-eyed stare. So sad.
Basically, the kind of circus where there's the front entrance at one end of the tent, and at the back of the tent there are very sturdy cages. Right?
Yeah.
Dispense with the cages.
And horrible, horrible stench of dung. Just huge amounts of dung, isn't it? And a lot of it is stress dung. It's not it's that. God, sorry, that's horrible. I mean, it's horrible.
It is horrible.
These were horrible things, weren't they? These circuses.
Our mutual friend Gareth went on holiday to Russia.
Oh, God.
Back in the times when I don't think you can go on holiday to Russia now, can you? If you're British, probably.
Well, I think if you can, you probably shouldn't at the moment.
But there are some absolutely fantastic deals. Come down to the Three Beans travel agency.
Crimea is cheap. he went on holiday many years ago now, maybe 8 years ago, to, I think, Moscow.
Mm.
And they, one of the things you're meant to go to is the circus there, which has been running for 150 years.
As the state circus, right? Yeah.
Right, yes.
Yeah, and it's not in a tent. It's in like a kind of purpose-built building, which apparently is quite impressive and all this kind of stuff. Uh-huh. And they went, and yes, it was very bear riding a bicycle.
Yeah, yeah.
Stuff that shouldn't be happening in the 21st century.
Monkey throwing knives at yeah. a woman rotating on a circular board.
Yeah. And apparently it was just very, very grim.
There's a thing called Zippo's Circus. Do you know about that? That's quite a big one in London.
Right.
I think I've driven past it.
Right, yeah.
Yes, I know the one you mean. What kind of thing is that? That looks like it's fairground rides, though, half the time, when I've come past it.
I've never, in my mind, fully, yeah, been able to distinguish between... There's some sort of grey area between fairground and circus, isn't there? Zippo Circus. So, yeah, I went to see them recently do a show.
At the Barbican?
No. No, it was actually... It was at Riverside Studios.
what?
Hammersmith. So they did a theatre show.
Right, okay.
With their sort of best of bits. And
hard to get a camel up the stairs in that venue, isn't it?
It really is.
That's part of the show in the end, isn't it?
Yeah.
They just incorporate it.
But there was a lot of motorbike stuff. There was a lot of balancing. And then there was like seven Brazilians. It was quite cool. There was an element of like there were like seven Brazilian guys who were doing stuff, who were like these Brazilian, like there was like this, there was troops within it.
Right.
And you do, there's a kind of romanticism, okay. isn't there, about like how does that work, being like seven Brazilian acrobats?
What's their life like? Yeah.
There was a lot of people going up, you know, doing scary things where you go, ooh, yeah, that's part of what the circus is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Acrobats balancing on things and you go, ooh, he nearly fell. But of course, but then it occurred to me that person isn't nearly falling over at all. You know, they're not on the edge of what they can do because... That this is just a job for them, so no one does their job, you know.
Are you saying, Henry, that we're not currently podcasting on the edge? Because that's what we promise our listeners.
No, we're very special, Ben. Yeah.
This is a chat tightrope walk. That's what you're listening to. And there's no safety net.
No safety net, except for the edit, which is a massive safety net. So, for example, at Bruton's Bakery, yeah?
Yeah.
Mr. Bruton, he's not, every time he makes a donut, he's not going, this donut is going to be so hot, the jam's going to be so hot, it's nearly going to kill me, but God damn it, I'm going to make it, I went too far, reel it in. Or like...
He's not piping it full of hot marmalade, is he?
Exactly, he's not. People operate, it's your job, so you operate within your... So, but where's the circus? Every time... A new acrobat was doing something with balancing. They were kind of doing this big play of like, oh, I'm right on the, oh, God, can I do it? Oh, I don't know if I can. Like, that's bollocks, mate. Listen, I'm going to make the Bruton. I shouldn't have shouted up. I did. I said, does Mr. Bruton shoot hot marmalade into a donut? Does he? I shouldn't have shouted that out.
Because he did fall off the ball.
Because he did then fall off the ball.
And down the ladder.
Down the ladder.
And into the pit of vipers.
Into the pit of vipers. And I didn't know they were real vipers.
Can I respectfully say that I think what you're saying is bollocks?
You can, mate. And I look forward to tearing you a new one on this, mate.
Yeah. Okay. Because what you're essentially saying is that all jobs have got the same level of danger, which is just totally wrong. I mean, it was Evel Knievel's job to... You know, get on a motorbike and fly over 20 London buses, but it was very dangerous.
Evel Knievel, he might have been the exception, though, right? Because I think there is a thing in clowning, isn't there? Definitely, where there's virtuosity in the feat, right? Well, they'll do a thing that looks impossible,
yeah.
That they're never going to make it, and then oh my god, they did it!
Exactly,
all that kind of stuff. It's sort of part of the rhythms of the shtick. Evel Knievel just genuinely did actually smash himself to pieces once every 3 months.
Yeah, but he was trying to break records. That's a different genre. Yeah. That's trying to break records and stuff. Yeah. Whereas a circus is, it's basically like EastEnders but live. I mean, they're doing it every day.
Yeah, they drown someone in a canal in the back of an Austin Metro every week. Don't
exactly.
They? Quite hard to do.
So this guy was piling up little boxes on top of each other. So what he would do is, let's say these acrobats, right? Each one's got, say, 10 minutes to fill. They need to get applause out of the audience. So what they do is they have to go, whoa, I did it. And then you go, yay. So there's tension. It's like, oh, is he not going to do it? Oh, he did it. And then you clap, right?
Tension and release.
tension and release. After they've done that once, they've got 10 minutes to keep on creating an atmosphere of tension and release. So what happens is they have to up the tension each time. So now it's like two chests of drawers on top of each other and he's standing on top. So I'm looking back thinking, that's weird, because a second ago he was trying to make us think he could only just manage to stand on one chest, and now he's...
stand on one box.
So actually that box was...
And I applauded that man because he stood on a box, and at the time...
Actually, looking back...
I was impressed, but maybe I shouldn't have been impressed about a man standing on a box.
Maybe I shouldn't have been impressed, because he's just like standing on a box.
Wait a second, I've stood on a box before.
I stand on a box loads.
Are you like, you're like one of those audience members who goes to stand-up and is a man and sits there and goes, I'm just as funny as these guys. Why are they laughing at the man on the stage? I'm just as funny!
I could do that! Ah!
Come on, Julie, we're leaving.
So you're spending the gig feeling sort of retrospectively misled.
That's what happened, yeah. I kept on feeling retrospectively misled more and more as it went on.
Mm.
It's one of the biggest scams. I mean, I think after the post office thing is is dealt with, it's the circuses that's going to be the next. That's who we're coming for.
They're using smaller and smaller boxes. Do you understand?
Do you understand? The enjoyment from the audience comes from thinking they're about to
witness a spinal injury.
Exactly. But that's
it's like watching skiing on TV. It's the same feeling.
So you have to feel that they're going to fall. But if they're really going to fall, yeah, if they are close to that, then statistically, they will be falling a lot of the time. They will be falling over and breaking their legs if they're genuinely working close to the edge. So it occurred to me, they are not even working close to the edge. They can't be. They cannot be working close to their edge. And if they're not working close to their edge, then they are lying. And you can dress it up all you want. You can wear a pair of tight, sparkly pants with stars on. But you are a liar, my friend. And so is that camel.
Maybe they need to bring you in as a new director.
Yeah, truth. Circus Verite.
The single most sued circus by its own performers in the world.
The only circus which guarantees injury every night.
The only circus with its own travelling A&E.
In fact, we now perform it on the roof of a London hospital. We will perform it on the roof of the UCH hospital, where I was born, as it happens. We've got a series of funnels, so the acrobat falls directly onto the operating table. It's operated on instantly.
And then back out onto the tightrope.
Back onto the tightrope and embrace.
So I understand what you mean, but I do still think that there is the chance of something going wrong that doesn't exist, for example, if you are an accountant or... I mean, obviously, a sedentary life is quite dangerous. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, an accountant can make a mistake which could bring a company down, destroy pension funds, ruin lives.
Good point. Now, that would be a watch, wouldn't it?
So, that's why we're making accountancy a spectator sport.
It's very slow bake. It's like old school cricket. You've got to put the time in, right?
Yeah.
Just watch him live.
Test accountancy.
You've got to put the time in, but it really, it pays off though. If you understand it.
Eventually, he will muck up someone's VAT return.
Running off and joining the circus. Yeah. Is that still open to us or anyone?
It's quite hard, isn't it? I think we don't live in a generation where it's very easy to run off and, like, you can obviously run away, but to run off to do a thing, because you used to have options. You could join the circus, you could join the Merchant Navy, you could join the French Foreign Legion. But even those guys now, like, you know, you've got to turn up with a passport and all that stuff. And yeah, it's harder to make good your escape, isn't it, to a new life.
It's interesting. Whenever the circus is in town, I do have a little stroll around the carriages or
the caravans.
The caravans. And they're not as romantic as they used to be now, are they? Because they're not like horse-drawn carts and stuff. They're big sort of burly metal blocks that are sort of truck-driven, I suppose, aren't they? I've noticed they have a lot of loud Alsatians around for security reasons.
Jumping through a flaming hoop.
there isn't. It just doesn't feel like there is a lot of romance around it. Is there any more somehow as a life of travelling around?
Plus the modern circus is professionalised, right? You can't just turn up. If you're an acrobat, you need to have been sort of training as a gymnast from the age of four, right? Got to start early, can't.
Yeah.
Oh, Mike, do you remember? I think, or maybe you were both involved in this. I do another podcast called Beef and Dairy Network, and we did a live show in the South Bank in a terrible venue, which was like big inflatable purple cow.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And just after our show was going to be a trampoline show.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And the trampoline people were the closest I've come to, like, meeting old-fashioned circus folk.
Yeah.
They were kind of Frenchy.
Yeah. They were Frenchy.
They had these slightly feral children.
Yes, they had feral children.
Yeah.
They had that taut, muscular
sort
of physique that you only get from hard circus work.
They're all very sinewy, weren't they?
Sinewy. A bit tattooed, maybe. Was there some tattoos knocking around?
They're very friendly.
They were lovely, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, friendly and lovely, but at the same time, could you sit down with them and have a conversation about council tax, for example?
I think when they hear the word council tax, they get straight back in the van and they're on the motorway before you can...
Then they go,
yeah.
We have let down too many routes here.
Yeah, I tried it. My residential parking permit chat with them really stunk out the joint. And I said, yeah,
yeah, they hated that, I remember. In fact, I remember the contortionist tried to swallow herself during that, I remember.
But yeah, they're nomadic, weren't they, basically? Because they're travelling, even the families within the group, they were all together all the time because they have to be. It's not like they're going away to do a weekend job and then coming back again. It's
no, definitely
constant, wasn't it, for those guys?
Yeah.
And my big question sort of all the way through was just, are these children going to school anywhere?
GCSE.
I think the answer was that their school was the trampoline, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe.
And their headmaster was an Alsatian.
I'm pleased to say we didn't directly ask them what the schooling situation was.
No, that was the elephant. Apart from the elephant, that was the second elephant in the room, wasn't it? The elephant in the room that wasn't wearing a sparkly dress was about those kids and their education, wasn't it? Yeah. In the future. What my mind is drawn to is like olden times. Like, I don't know, like were there circuses as far back as that? Or I don't know. Like, olden times, obviously way before internet and before plane travel and road travel, the circus coming to town.
The travelling entertainment in whatever form it takes, the minstrel, the troubadour, the circus. Yeah,
that would have been massive, presumably.
Yeah, of course. You know, it's a must-see, right? It's not, yeah. Here's the entertainment that your villagers are going to get possibly for the next 6 months.
Yeah, and I suppose there was that idea that you could go with them in theory. You could, that would have been tempting, wouldn't it, to disappear off with them?
And they might have been wearing they might be wearing colours that you've never seen before.
Yes. yeah.
With stories from Swindon. What news from Bracknell?
Yeah, it's all very exotic.
I don't know why I think I know this. This might be bollocks. I think in the medieval period, a lot of times, like, Italian people would come over and perform in Britain. And it was seen as being very exciting because of the sort of Italian travelling...
Sort of commedia-type gangs.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's what I think... I feel like that is part of the circus, which I liked when I saw this one recently, where there was, like, the Brazilian troupe. And then I think there was, like... I think there was some Chinese acrobats is a thing, isn't it? I think...
Yeah, definitely.
I think there was a Chinese. So,
yeah.
Obviously, before the internet. So, for example, now I can Google. I can just put into Google
7 Brazilian men. Put that into Google. See what you get.
Oh, I can just Google 7. If I'm going to do it right now,
7 Brazilian men, comma brackets, lithe, supple, unusually strong.
7 Brazilian men. It's come up. Brazilian 7-a-side football. I'll just put 7 Brazilian men shagging in. Let's just get it done. Let's just get it done. We can move on. Before the internet, that would have been like, I think the fact that there were international troops within these circuses would have been like amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But how do you break into a Brazilian acrobat troupe? If you're me now, it's difficult, isn't it?
I'm going to go as far as to say that it would be literally impossible for you to join the Brazilian acrobat troupe.
And that will be the first line of the most successful film of 2027, will be you saying that.
Is this a film, a documentary then, that follows your journey?
Yeah, yeah, it's Henry's acrobat journey.
At the end of which you have inveigled your way in an admin role To which you are wholly unsuited.
Yeah. And you're living illegally in Brazil.
And I haven't been fired technically, but I've held it in legal stasis. I'm not employed by them, I'm not employed by them, so technically I'm still working for the circus in theory.
Yeah. The only way you can stay in Brazil is if you do 2 years of Brazilian national service. That's it.
So I've got another legal case which I'm trying to say, can I do that in an admin role as well? Now I've got more and more admin jobs that I'm less and less qualified to do. That's where I'm at. Didn't say it'd be a successful film. Actually, I did. Yeah, if we had to join the circus, what would be the most likely thing we'd be able to do?
I think Mike would make a great clown.
I mean, Mike, we haven't said this. Mike has got everything pretty much, hasn't he? He could do it.
Lion tamer.
Yeah, he could be lion tamer. I think Mike could be an acrobat. Mike's got the sort of physique and the strength. Yeah. I reckon.
Mike made a short film with lots of contortionists, right?
I did. That was very fun.
They were amazing.
They were proper acrobats. Yeah, there was a contortionist there and a bunch of acrobats. Portuguese acrobats. There was a gang there from Mimbra Theatre who were amazing. And no, they were cool. They were very cool people.
Were they UK-based?
They were UK-based then and now, I think.
Now, what were they like off-duty, like in the breaks, and like around the work? Like
well, they're normal people, so they weren't constantly like... Like the acrobats, they weren't talking to you from the chandelier or something like that. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
It wouldn't be. It wasn't like you'd pick up your espresso cup and find that the contortionist was within it, disguised as a lump of sugar.
I'm trying to chill out, mate. Can you leave me alone? I'm trying to have him a break. So you're not always upside down or in funny positions. Okay, good to know.
But it was like it was the life. Like they did make me feel like an amateur. Like, as a comedian, like, now and again, going off, oh, I've got to go to Coventry to do a gig or whatever, and feeling like, wow, I'm doing everything I can. You know, I even wrote a bit on the train or whatever. I mean, like, it's the life.
They're all in.
Yeah, they're completely all in. I have had to be in from, you know, from a very, very young age.
Yeah.
And are constantly nursing sort of knee injuries and,
you
know, binding their feet and taping bits up and, you know, taking chunks out of themselves when they're practicing stuff and, you know. Coming up with new manoeuvres.
I assume they're on a kind of ibuprofen drip most of the time when they're not
exactly,
before.
Exactly. Yeah.
The other sense I get from circus folk is I got it when I saw this show recently. I got it when Ben, as you were describing, when we did that gig, and there was a circus on after us. Is that this might be a cliche, but in my mind, in their off time, it's neat vodka and bawdy tails. Do you know what I mean? like kind of old fashioned idea of a seat of a sailor or something. Just like proper. Yeah. Let's get the vodka out. Shots. Bawdy's tails, and they better be bawdy because otherwise we're going to fight.
A very sort of barely furnished underground bar that's only got one type of drink on offer. Yeah. It's just the homemade vodka, dancing until 7 o'clock in the morning.
Dancing and fighting, and there's no real distinction between dancing and fighting and sex between them. It's all one sort of, I don't know, convulsion.
Very similar to the Lib Dems. Before we do our emails, Mike has a little plug.
Oh, I do have a little plug, please. So I'm doing a sort of mini... The tour I took around last year, Zusa, I'm doing a little mini tour of that with Little Wonder because I'm going to make an audio album of it. And that's sort of mid-Feb to mid-March. So if you fancy coming along, there's still a handful of tickets knocking about hither and thither. Lyme Regis, for example, St Austell, a couple of others maybe. But it's all on littlewonder.co.uk.
Yeah, I'll put a link in the show description so people can find that.
And then the plan is to release it as an audio album after that.
Superb.
Your Dark Side of the Moon.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
It's a great show.
It is a great show, yeah.
Well, cheers, lads. You've got to say that, haven't you, really? Socially, you know, in terms of social mores.
That's true.
I know, but... We actually mean it, which we also would have to say. So there's no way of...
Yeah. So that's it.
Put it this way, if I lived in Lyme Regis, I'd certainly think about going.
Yeah. Assuming I've already been to the Lyme Museum, which I probably... which if I live there... Although it might be one of those things where you never go.
Well, so it's under your nose the whole time, isn't it?
Exactly. So it might be actually that Mike's show is actually the thing that's going to finally get you off... out of the house and go and finally visit the Lyme Museum.
In which case, my work here is done, you know. I've provided a service.
Exactly. And you know, especially the interactive bit where you can squeeze a lime, don't they? Let you squeeze. I think they let you squeeze.
Well, it's not a real lime.
It's the same people that make my croissants. Yeah.
It's a fiberglass lime voiced by Bill Oddie, isn't it? He talks you through the life cycle of a lime.
Yeah.
Yeah, so actually talking about it now, I think I'd probably go to that rather than Mike Strait. But
yeah, if it's a toss-up between the two, I think that's pretty clear. Yeah.
Also, you don't actually get to squeeze the genuine fiberglass lime, do you? That was voiced by Bill Oddie. It's a replica. It's a fiberglass.
The original. Oh yeah, yeah. It's not the original. No. That's been missing for years.
From the great unsolved art heists, isn't it? They assume it's a probably like a Russian oligarch or something's got it.
One of those ones that lives in Torquay, yeah.
Yeah.
Or it's, might be. Might be all Serbian mobsters, yeah. Maybe using it as leverage. We don't really just know.
When you send an email, you must give thanks to the postmasters that came before.
Good morning, postmaster. Anything for me?
Just some old shit.
When you send an email, this represents progress. Like a robot shoeing a horse.
Give me your health.
My beautiful horse.
Okay, time for your emails. This is an email from Sandon from Tasmania.
Hello.
Dear Beans. Hello. In your Castles episode, a listener sent in a recording of the Bean theme played over the top of an impromptu by Schubert. This prompted Henry to pitch a film where Ben is sent back into the past and wakes up in Schubert's body.
Yeah.
Hearing it back, it does sound good, doesn't it?
Does sound good. Anyway, well, Sandon says, I'm not sure this would be appropriate casting. One of them is a short, nearsighted, penniless, Habsburg-supporting composer, ignored by his contemporaries and absolutely riddled with syphilis.
Hang on.
And the other one is Schubert.
He's done it!
Yay!
Woohoo! He's done it, by Jove.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage the old switcheroo.
Okay, yes, I see what you're saying. Yeah, you're saying that. What? Hang on, I thought you were trying to say that.
Oh, he's gone the other... What? Oh, he's gone the other way around. He means that... Oh, that's what he meant. What? So, what he said before wasn't actually... Now he's gone the other way around with it. Oh, God.
It's the old switcheroo.
Nicely done.
Beautifully done.
Very good. I just like to say I'm not short.
It's an optical illusion that you appear short, but
you sound
not.
Short.
You sound short. Well, that's why you always carry around three different sized Toblerones, isn't it? With you. Because if you arrange them in a row and you walk.
Go on.
Right, if the eye of the viewer is at point A,
right,
and Ben is at point B,
which is next to miniature Toblerone, is it?
Ben's at point B, the miniature Toblerone is at point C,
yeah.
The medium Toblerone is at point D.
And you're standing by the yardstick Toblerone, right?
If Ben then walks from point E to point C, assuming the person...
In an elliptical fashion. At twilight...
Yeah, in twilight. I'm assuming the person at point A is really drunk. Like, badly drunk. Then Ben will appear to actually be his actual size. For a fraction of a second during that experience.
Assuming trinocular vision.
We have to assume you have trinocular vision, which means you've got one eye... For the left, one over the right, and another eye on the end of your nose, isn't it? That's trinocular vision. Only a few theoretical beings have. No, but sorry, they've made a mistake, which is you're not playing Schubert in this. You're playing yourself in Schubert's body. So he's saying you're bad casting for Schubert. You're playing you.
Hey,
that's a good point.
It took him on a journey to a perfectly delivered switcheroo.
Yeah. That's true. It's rare to see a switcheroo pulled off with such a land, to be honest.
Beautifully done.
Yeah.
Beautifully done.
Well done.
Yeah.
Okay, next email is from Alex from Heavytree.
Hello, Alex. Oh.
Heavy tree?
Heavy tree. Where's that?
There is most definitely a heavy tree, a hop, skip and a jump and where from where I'm sat at
really?
This very minute.
Oh, is it?
A part of Exeter City.
Oh.
The subject title of the email is I whispered Pompidou in Mike's ear and showed him my ass this weekend.
Yeah.
And yet we had a conversation at the beginning, which is like nothing had happened to us all this week. Mike didn't mention that.
So he says, on Saturday morning, I was out for a run in Exeter, and I ran past Mike while he was taking Pam for a walk.
True.
Pam. Good girl, Pam. Good girl, Pam. Oh, Pam. Pam.
I ran past without saying anything, regretting the opportunity missed. About 5 miles later, as I was completing my loop, I could see a moustache in the distance. Lo and behold, a chance for redemption. I ran up behind him, put my hand on his back, and whispered the word Pompidou.
Yeah.
He was clearly startled. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, well, of course he would have been.
Well, he's also missed out. He did come from behind. I think he not only came from behind, but came in through that sort of, you know, here you have a sort of physical blind spot as well.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's behind. But behind is the blind spot, isn't it?
Unless you've got trinocular vision.
Yeah, exactly.
Trinocular vision. With adrenaline coursing through my veins, I decided to sprint off while leaving Mike stunned.
Yeah.
An unfortunate gust of wind caught my shorts. Brackets, which would be better described as an overpriced loincloth.
Yeah, right. That was an accidental blow of wind. Yeah, I bet it had a little bit of help along the way, didn't it?
Pam and I will loiter next to the gusting machine. Just on the off chance that someone's wearing some flimsy shorts.
Lifting the back flap of my shorts high into the air. I was not wearing underwear for maximum aerodynamics.
What?
My only hope is that Mike was so startled by a random bloke whispering Pompidou in his ear that he was unable to pay attention to my rather unkept cheeks. Best wishes, Alex.
Thanks, Alex. And I appreciated the whole encounter. He went off with terrific speed, such speed that at one point I thought he was going to fall over and go fully A over T. But I don't think he needs to worry about it. He was quite a young man and he's looking after himself. He's a jogger.
Is that your way of saying he's got nice buttocks?
His buttocks were in great shape.
Yeah.
And if you're going to let a pair of buttocks out on a cold, frosty January morning, you could do far worse than Alex of Heavertree's buttocks.
I think you need to be careful here, Mike, because you don't want to encourage people to sort of track you down and show you their arse, really. That's not...
You assume.
Yeah. That was quite a big assumption in there, Ben, wasn't there? What an extraordinary tale.
Finally, Mel, this is from Chris from Bremen.
Hello, Chris.
Hi, Beans. I was delighted to hear your Indiana Jones chat in the Castles episode, not only due to the lukewarm nature of the banter, but also and primarily because my dad plays Archimedes in the movie.
What? No way. Wow.
Wow.
As the son of the great inventor and polymath, I feel it is within my rights to offer all casting directors who may be listening a Pompidou discount of 10% on all his acting services, excluding voiceover work. Lots of love and all the best, Chris.
Oh, brilliant. I've still not seen it. That makes me want to see it even more. Thank you, Chris, and thank you, Chris's dad, for answering that casting email that you must have assumed was a mistake on first read.
Thanks to everyone who signed up on our Patreon.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
If you'd like to do so, go to patreon.com/threebeansalad. The main event is you can get our monthly bonus episode. We also have ad-free episodes. And if you sign up at the Sean Bean tier, you get a shout out from Mike from the Sean Bean Lounge, where Mike was last night.
Oh.
And it was a fun but practical one last night, wasn't it? Because the local blacksmith had come round and was doing bespoke horseshoes if you wanted one.
It was bespoke horseshoe night last night at the Sean Bean Lounge, and here's my report. It was Bespoke Horseshoe Night last night at the Sean Bean Lounge. Christina Knowles fulfilled a lifelong ambition and had horseshoes made in the shape of disco balls, which were then shot upon the feet, hands and noses of Henry Parry, Chris Gosney and Dan Owens, all of whom were then forced to dance the Frederick Hillinger smelting poker before being melted down and recast into a statue of Lucinda as a Napoleonic general, atop which an iron pigeon was cast in the image of Ryan Bateman, which was then hung upside down for good luck. The farrier then turned their attention to James, who opted for K-pop-themed horseshoes, Tito Sandstorm, who went for a thermos flask variety, Winter Ellis, who chose the theme of true crime, and Cordelia, whose horseshoes told the story of the Great Plague. Tessa Fish, Dowpo, and Andrew Templeton clumped together to have timeshare horseshoes made of precious jewels, only to have Scott Broadhurst claim the emeralds were stolen from his badminton tiara, Alison claimed the diamond was taken from her moon drill, and Adrian Lockery claimed the mother's second cousin of Pearl was taken from his father's bastard's nephew's solitaire set. In the What Goes in the Sean Bean Lounge Stays in the Sean Bean Lounge sub-lounge, Lauren Welburn had horseshoes made of the pelts of fox hunters, Emily Rona had horseshoes made of unethical investment portfolio documents, Hattie Jones had horseshoes made of Enid Blyton novels, Michael had horseshoes made of smoking, and Gemma Burgess had horseshoes made from the tears of polar bears that had been intended for use in replenishing a withered glacier. In the Sean Bean Casino Zone, Claire Lowen, Chris B and Matthew Donald all chose the mystery box and ended up with horseshoes that included the warrants for the arrest of Richard Churchill and his subsequent extradition to Guam. They enacted the warrant with such brutal efficiency that they were rewarded with a slice of Jenny Lang's savoury horseshoe pies and treated to a rendition of the national anthem by Graham Wells on a freshly minted horseshoe trumpet. Don McGowan misjudged the mood by attempting to commission sexy horseshoes before backpedaling and claiming they were intended as a gift from Alexander Murphy to Jamie Thelen and not for personal use, a claim Alexander and Jamie were able to refute using the Filofax horseshoes of James Dolan and Rolo, upon which their schedules and innermost thoughts were documented. But the night was rounded off with a more aspirational spirit, as Dylan had a set of horseshoes fashioned with ensuite, Jen Fitzgerald went for a jukebox set, Yulia Dmitrieva was shod with horseshoes that clickety-clacked perfectly into stirrups, Laura McKenzie had horseshoes made with their own small orbit, into which Josh Morgan was launched as a man satellite to deter midges, and Charlie Osborne commissioned horseshoes that were haunted by the spirit of a medieval peasant known as Bennett the Bothersome Little Wanker. Thanks all.
Okay, that's the end of the show, but we will finish with a version of our theme tune sent in by one of you. This one is from Damien and Emily.
Hello.
Hello.
And they have sent in a version of our theme tune, which they describe as being our version of your theme in the key of Springsteen, called The Streets of Beanadelphia.
Oh, brilliant. Nice.
Thank you. That sounds smashing.
So that's the end of the series.
Thanks all for listening.
We have February off.
We shall return in March.
See you
with
in
series
March.
12. Is that right?
Is it?
Absolutely smashed The Sopranos out of the water. I mean, we left them all behind, haven't we? Sopranos, Breaking Bad, Succession. Left them all behind.
But not Last of the Summer Wine.
No, still not Last of the Summer Wine.
Or Gardener's World.
Or Gardener's World or Springwatch. But a lot of big hitters have just fallen by the wayside. And they said a lot of people thought we wouldn't be more successful than The Sopranos, didn't they? A lot of people said that. Some people thought it was such an assumption, they didn't even bother saying it.
Some people are very much in their I told you so phase, aren't they, with regards to that prediction.
Yeah.
Take that, whoever wrote The Sopranos. Bye.
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 Thank you. On the street.